You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Hey, Kate, what are you listening to?
This song is awesome.
Oh, that's great. What's the name of it?
No, this song is awesome.
Oh, well, what's that from?
You could be standing on Broadway, the lights all aglow, but the marquee's displaying a name you don't know. Well, there's no need to be nervous, we're still glad that you've come, and we welcome you to What's That From? It's Kate and Josh on What's That From?
Hello!
Welcome back to What's That From?
A podcast exploring musicals we don't know, but probably should. I'm Kate.
And I'm Josh. And this is episode 5 of season 2. And this week we're exploring
Ride the Cyclone. Ooh.
We're on like a spooky kick right now.
And on accident, because in case you have forgotten, these are musicals that we don't know. So how was I to know that this was also a spooky...
But what's funny is, like, I tend to like spooky things, so I'm kind of shook that I don't know all these spooky shows.
Yeah. So let's dive right in. It's Halloween in April. New holiday.
We've heard Christmas in July.
New holiday.
About Halloween in April.
Well, Josh, I'm not sure if you know what time it is, but it's actually...
It's 9:43 in the morning.
Oh, it's actually time for you to do the 30-second plot challenge. Are you ready?
I'm ready to ride.
Oh. We'll ride the cyclone in 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so this show is about 5 students and a 6th student that we meet later that we learn were on a roller coaster ride at a theme park that broke at the peak of it, and they all died. And we have, like, this fortune teller robot thing that is their, like, spirit guide in this, like, weird in-between nether world between, like, real life and death. And they all have to, like, make their pitch for why they should come back.
Done.
That was already 30 seconds?
Yes.
I feel like I have done them that have lasted way longer than that. That is not fair. Okay, I got pretty close. I was taking my time because usually I feel like I have time at the end. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, so I guess the...
That was close.
Yeah. And the punchline of the show, we didn't get to. So now it's like, dun, dun, dun. And then what happens?
Yeah. Well, now you got to listen for that.
Yeah. So shall we?
Shall we?
Shall we? So this show has music, lyrics, and book written by Jacob Richmond and Brooke Maxwell. It's a recent show.
Mm-hmm. Contemporary musical.
Contemporary, if you will. It is the second installment in Richmond's Uranium Scream trilogy, which are 3 theatrical works. The third one isn't written yet.
But they're all based in the same universe.
In Uranium City.
Which is in...
Like, not to be confused with the Electric City. It's Granted. And this show has a pretty big TikTok following, sort of... It gives me Heather's energy.
Yeah, it definitely has, like, young, crazy theater kid cult energy.
Yeah. Heather's, right? Heather's. Like, don't you feel like it's giving that?
Totally. Campy, horror, contemporary.
Yeah. That's, like, its own genre now. Actually, I think. So, the world premiere took place in Victoria, British Columbia in 2008, and it toured West Canada in 2013. The American premiere was actually at the Chicago Shakespeare. Shout out, Illinois.
Chi-town.
Midwest. Midwest is best. And that was in September of 2015. And then it eventually moved off Broadway in 2016. Right. So
it's had a lot of lives.
Yeah.
And it's gone through a lot of different versions, too.
Right.
Across the board, there's been songs that were cut and replaced, a lot of lyric changes, and cast changes, too. But, like, pretty much they've stuck with a similar creative vision and concept throughout a couple different lives of the show.
Yeah. It's really interesting looking conceptually. I feel like most productions, at least that I've watched on the internet, look
very similar.
Very similar. Yeah. Hey, it's not broke. Don't fix it. Except the roller coaster is broke.
The ride is broke. Needs to be fixed. Do not ride. Your Kate's probably not even tall enough, so.
All right. They cut it off.
Should we dive in?
We should dive in. So, the story, the show opens with this creepy headless person.
My favorite way to start a musical. A little girl comes out with no head.
Just sings a song. It's called Karnak's Dream Life. It's this creepy, it's like, carnival-y.
Just really establishing the spooky vibes from the top.
It's so spooky from the top. But kind of a cool song. And honestly sets you right up for what you're about to see.
Yeah.
They kind of tell you. It's sort of like, to me, it's similar in a way to Hadestown, where right in the beginning, they're like, it's a sad tale. I'm going to tell you exactly what's going to happen. It's a tragedy. Like, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then you watch it happen. I feel like this sort of does the same thing where he's like,
get ready.
Because people died and this happened and there was a crazy this. And now let's watch it all happen.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, a little setup.
Yeah.
Then we meet the amazing Karnak, who is a mechanical fortune teller. Like, in Big. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting in the cast recording, there's sort of like an added track called Welcome. It's not really in the live productions, but he's just sort of like, here's exactly what, welcome, thanks for listening to the album.
Yeah, the cast recording is kind of its own theatrical experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But he basically sort of lays out
who he is,
what he does.
Yeah. And basically he is a fortune teller robot that can predict exactly when you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
And so we learn that he predicted that all these kids were going to die, but
he's on like, well, and because he's at the carnival, he got like switched to the family setting on his fortune teller button. Like someone switched it to like family mode. So even though he met the kids before the roller coaster, he was unable to tell them that they were going to die because he could only be like in family friendly mode or like carnival advertisement mode.
Right. He was like, censored. What? Were you silent or were you silenced?
He was silenced.
He was silenced.
And then he knows when he's gonna die too. He says right in the beginning he has this rat named Virgil.
Who is chewing on the power cord.
Right.
And once he bites all the way through, 200 volts of electricity will kill them both instantly.
Mm-hmm.
The rat and the robot.
Yeah. And then the rat goes on to play the bass in the show.
Thank God.
Huh? I was like, okay.
I mean, just so you know what you're signing up for, everybody, this show is a trip.
It's a trip.
It is a roller coaster.
You ride the cyclone as well.
Yeah.
And do you live? Who's to say? And you know what? I live. I'm living.
Buckle up. So then we see Karnak. He's going to summon the spirits of the five teenagers from Uranium City.
Saskatchewan.
That's what I tried to say earlier. I just kind of mumbled.
Because I'm dead.
And so they're all members of a chamber choir. So they're all in like these school uniforms and also kind of plays into the fact of like why they sing.
Right.
So then we hear a song called the Uranium Suite, which is basically just the establishment of these five
kids. Like Uranium City and... while they're singing, Karnak introduces all of them and sort of like talks about their death. So it's kind of this eerie narrator telling this like creepy story while these kids are singing a chamber choir song vibe.
And then we meet the sixth mystery contestant, is who they call Jane Doe because they don't know who she is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who we met in the beginning, whose head was chopped off
in the crash.
And nobody could identify her body.
Bonk.
Jane Doe. And so she has a doll head that's replaced her head so that we could actually have an actor play this part and that person can contribute.
Right.
So she has a creepy doll head attached to her headless body.
Perfect.
Thanks.
Perfect. So the first contestant up to fight for the right to live is Ocean O'Connell.
Which, this is such a random side point, but like, all I can think about is Billie Eilish. Because isn't her last name O'Connell? And then we have Ocean Eyes. Am I crazy, or is there a Billie Eilish through line this season too?
No, there is.
Isn't that her name, Billie Eilish O'Connell?
Yes.
Ocean Eyes? Ocean O'Connell? I think Billie's the ghostwriter of every musical we've done.
Ride the Cyclone has 5 days to respond. Just kidding. But yeah, that is kind of crazy. But Ocean O'Connell is giving Veruca Salt from Willy Wonka. She's giving overachiever, know-it-all, perfectionist, know-it-all, has-it-all.
It girl.
Brat it girl. And so she's sort of like, I'm going to go first. I've watched a lot of reality TV and I'm a perfectionist and I know exactly what you're going to make me do. And just let me go.
Pick me, choose me.
Pick me, choose me. So she sings, oh my God. She sings What the World Needs.
And not the one you think. It's not What the World Needs Now.
I don't know that
song. You don't know that song?
No, what's that from?
You've never seen that video of all the Broadway stars when they get together and sing What the World Needs Now, like We Are the World style?
No.
What? I know somebody listening to this knows what I'm talking about.
They definitely do. Okay, well, maybe I'll know Okay, anyways.
She sings the other What the World Needs.
It's such a good song. It's a bop. Immediately stuck to my brain.
Yep.
It's so good. The song is essentially like, it's giving social Darwinism. It's like survival of the fittest. I'm the best. Everyone else is weakling. Yeah. So I should survive to carry on.
It's the opposite vibe of what the music gives off, actually. The music is very peppy and like positive. Yeah. But she's actually being like, I'm better than you all.
Yeah. And it's awesome. It's so catchy. So she sings that and then
she kind of shoots herself in the foot because after she sings that song, kind of puts everybody down. We learn that the group is going to decide which one of them is going to be allowed back to return back to life.
And she's like, actually,
I take everything back. I just said that was a joke.
It was a joke.
JK.
Yeah, that's literally what she says.
I mean, that was rude of him to do that after he let her go like that.
Yeah, but it's also, I think it's important to note that this show does have a really funny undertone. Like, yes, it's creepy and weird and kind of sad, but it's
very
funny.
Silly. Yeah.
So I think that's also after the song and the cast recording, at least too. He's like, "What?" He was like, it's interesting how you can make anything sound fun if you add a little like poppy tune under it, even social Darwinism. Yeah. And she's like, "Gee, like that's so fun." So then after that, Ocean's like, "Okay, I take it back. I was just kidding." She's offended, obviously, everyone, because she picks them out one by one and calls them each a zero. And it's like, just giving them she's roasting each of them. So then we move on to our next contestant, Noel Gruber.
Gay.
No. And he is the only like gay boy in the small town where he lives.
And his story is that he dreams of being a French prostitute, but he's stuck working at Taco Bell.
Aren't we all? Aren't we all? Preach, Noel.
This is when the show like takes a weird left for me. You know what I mean? Like the first number is silly and like sets up like what's about to happen, like the game they're about to play, that they all have to choose who's gonna be the one that goes back. But then when they start all telling their individual stories,
it's like, what's going on?
So he does this number, the versions I've seen mostly in drag.
Right.
And
he wants to be Monique Gabeau. And it's inspired by, I think, an old movie, Marlene Dietrich and the Blue Angel.
Who dies by typhoid flu at the end of the song.
Yeah, Noel's Lament. It's a great drama song, yeah, to be honest. Yeah, each of these little people are very quirky. They got a lot of silly things going on in their mind. So his song ends, Ocean is pissed. Annoyed.
And it's like, there was no point to that. That was just a random story.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point was that they're all supposed to be telling a story that kind of pleads why they deserve that second chance.
Mm-hmm.
And so she sings a song called Every Story's Got a Lesson. And she gets the other girl, Constance, to perform an anti-drug improv PSA with her, even though it becomes clear that Constance is not who Ocean wants her to be.
And Constance is Ocean's best friend.
And kind of like her sidekick.
Yeah.
She's in the shadow.
In the shadows. Dun dun.
Then we meet our third contestant, Misha Baczynski.
This is where it goes off the rails for me.
He's a Ukrainian adoptee who immigrated after his mother died from radiation poisoning while on the cleanup crew for Chernobyl. And so he was put up for adoption, and when they did that, they lied about his age. And so when he was adopted, his Canadian parents thought that he was going to be like a potty trained 2-year-old, but they got a teenage boy that was violent and drinks a lot. Kind of like that HBO story. Do you ever see that? Like, I go down TikTok spirals.
Yeah.
And recently I've gone down the spiral of that family that adopted that little girl that they thought was like 5 or something, but then they were convinced that she was actually like in her like early 20s or like late teens and like
what?
Was trying to murder them.
What?
And then they did like a whole documentary on HBO where the little girl was like, no, I am literally the age that you thought I was.
Stop.
And her family had like abandoned her. What? You never heard this either?
No. Yeah, what's going on? I'm feeling a little bit out of the loop.
Feeling a little bit out of the loop. Yeah. I mean, you don't really want to ride the loop.
So true. She's broke.
So, anyways, sorry. Sorry for all the tangents today.
Yeah, but this show just brings up a lot. There's a lot of content.
I mean, this show has a lot of tangents.
It does. That's so real.
So then Misha is, like we just said, Ukrainian adoptee.
And he turns to, and I quote, self-aggrandizing commercialized hip-hop.
So he posts his raps on YouTube. He's a rapper. Like,
he's a rapper. He's an artist. He's a poet, drinker. Even. And so he sings a song called This Song Is Awesome.
It's like trap, auto-tune, over-the-top, like, white boy hip-hop.
Yes. This is when in my ears were like, what am I listening to?
And then it goes and it ventures into, like, a love ballad of he fell in love with this, with a fiance that he has online.
In the YouTube comment section. That he
met on YouTube.
Talia.
Yes.
Which, you know what? They were real for that. Because people do be doing that.
Online love.
On the YouTube. Chronically online people. Including our friend, Misha. He's silly. His song's silly.
Yeah.
So then we finally meet our fourth contestant, Ricky Potts.
And there's a couple different, like, versions of this character in the Ride a Cyclone multiverse. But basically, he's a boy with an unnamed degenerative disease that left him unable to walk. But in the afterlife, he is able to walk. All of his abilities have been restored.
Right. And he is able to, like, I think with the disease, he was, like, unable to walk, and then he was sort of, like, unable to talk or do anything such as that. But then in later iterations, they've sort of changed it to, instead of having a degenerative disease, he's mute because of trauma, yeah. Which it's giving Who's Tommy.
Yeah. But, like, this got kind of some backlash from diehard fans of the show.
Mm-hmm. And also just sort of the conversation of, like, ableist theater.
Right.
There's been, like,
some backlash. Are they helping by removing that so that people aren't playing stereotypes of disabled people? Or are they hurting by removing it and not giving the opportunity for a disabled actor to play that part?
Right. There was a lot of...
I mean, I could see both sides of the argument. You know what I mean?
Me too. Me too.
But, I mean, it's a hard line to ride.
Yeah. So, and it was talked about a lot on TikTok, on social media, especially about this character in specific.
But Ricky developed a lot of fantasies from his childhood with his 14 cats. And he's created his own religion that he is the savior of a race of sentient anthropomorphs. What? Say this for me. Anthropomorphic?
Anthropomorphic cats.
From a distant galaxy.
Slay, Ricky.
Slay, Ricky.
You better work, Ricky.
Space Age Bachelor Man is the number.
And so he... Originally, in the original version, he concedes his chance of being resurrected. He forfeits. But that was removed in later iterations.
Because I'm like, what's the narrative? That, like, life isn't worth living because he's disabled?
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm glad they took that
out.
Yeah,
me too.
That's bad.
Yeah, let Ricky live his dreams.
But his dream.
He's a religious leader.
This is a crazy number.
Crazy. This is another one where in my headphones I was like.
It's kind of like disco 60s vibe space.
And then you hear the lyrics and you're like, what are we singing about? And you look at the title and you say, Space Age Bachelor Man. There's something. You gotta listen to this album, you guys. Like, for real. It's worth it.
It is. It is. And that's the cool thing about the show is that all the songs are different genres and each of the characters are so unique. You really have to put together a diverse cast of, like, individual people's talents. You know what I mean? Like, it's, like, a wide range of people.
No, this show is giving... Okay, it's giving Cats,
but it's also
meets
giving...
Putnam Spelling Bee.
I was about to say that.
Yeah. Meets
We didn't even talk about that before this. I was literally about to say it is so Cats meets Spelling Bee meets Sideshow.
Whoa. Whoa. We're on the same
Should
page.
Should we do like a production where it's like immersive and like it's like every night's a different one, but it's the same set?
You know what would be cool? If you rode a roller coaster through the production and each person was a different like stop on the roller coaster.
Well, you know. Oh, you mean like for this?
Yeah.
Ryan Murphy.
he would eat this show.
I mean, I know we have this weird affliction for Ryan Murphy in musicals, but like actually.
Get into it.
He should do this show.
Okay, anyways. So now we meet Jane Doe. I mean, again, but we get her we keep meeting her. And
so she has the Ballad of Jane Doe.
She has Ballad of Jane Doe. Not like major bummer.
This sounds like this song could be in Assassins.
Yes.
The Ballad of Jane Doe.
Oh yeah, because it's like the Ballad of Shulgosh or whatever. But she just is wanting she is dwelling on how horrible it is. She doesn't remember anything. She has no head in the afterlife. She doesn't remember who she was in life.
And the choir director actually died the next day from stress.
Mm-hmm.
And so they weren't even able to identify her body.
Which I'm like, she had no parents?
No, literally.
No one was like, my daughter didn't come back.
Or like the kids at school went like, where's Susie? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, they really just, they're like, well, they're like, no head. I guess we can't identify her whole body. All right. Well, okay. I guess times were different in 2008 or whatever.
So then they feel bad for her, and so they sing the new birthday song to throw her a birthday party.
Mm-hmm. Because in sort of direct opposition to everyone else, she's kind of singing about how sad she is and how she has no life. For everyone else, kind of trying to prove how awesome they were to get their chance at life, she's kind of like, I have nothing awesome.
Right.
So yeah, they have a little birthday celebration, which is really cute. They're all coming together and being...
Nice awesome. For once.
Yeah.
So Ricky bonds with Jane, and we see Noel and Misha connecting. So we kind of just see the first time that they aren't all individuals, that they are coming together.
Yeah, and kind of like making connections with each other. It's sweet. So Ocean and Constance finally have their...
It's been building up.
It's been building up. Yeah. And we haven't heard from Miss Constance yet. So she's still in the shadows. So they come head to head. Ocean ends up hurting Constance in her desperation to return to life. And then Constance stands up for herself and punches Ocean in the breast.
Slay.
Yeah, Constance said boob punch. So
her number is Jawbreaker.
And it's her. She takes the final turn and... It's actually pretty sad. She reveals that, like, right before the incident, like a couple of hours before the
crash,
the derailing, Constance lost her virginity to a 32-year-old carny in a porta potty. Because she was like, I just wanted to get it over with. And she's like the goody two shoes in the town, mm-hmm. and she was tired of people, pigeonholing her. And so. She was like, you know, I just want to get out of the way, but it actually was kind of out of self-hatred. Like, I just wasn't comfortable in my own skin. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, that is so sad.
Right.
Yeah. So she reenacts how she expected people to talk about that happening when they found out, like, it was a carny and a porta potty, and how she was frustrated with her image. And her family had so much pride and being from Uranium City. And then in high school, she just went through that phase where everything's lame, nothing's cool, I don't care, I'm ungrateful.
And then at the peak moment of the derailing of the roller coaster, she has this like change of light where she realizes she should appreciate everything and let it all go.
And her small town and her family and the people around her.
She appreciate it all.
Sugar cloud.
But she realized it at the last second.
I know. It's really... That's so real, though. Yeah. I can imagine... I mean,
her life flashed before her eyes.
Yeah. Right? And like, you just, you're like, wow, why am I?
It's all so much more simple.
Yeah.
Sugar cloud.
So then Ocean apologizes to Constance after, you know, she finally stands up for herself as if like seeing her for the first time.
Right.
Sweet.
And then it's time for the final vote. And then Karnak's like changing the rules. And so he gives Ocean the power to make the final vote because she has the highest GPA. So he gives her the power now.
It's like, huh?
So then they all make the decision together to send Jane back because she doesn't have any memories to bring with her into the afterlife. Like, they all have this baggage.
They're like, we have 17 years of memories and people, and like, at least in our death we have something to remember and a legacy to live by, and Jane has
a lesson learned.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And it's sweet because in the beginning of the show, Ocean would never have given that opportunity to anyone else, but through hearing everyone's stories and, you know, they
get
all
some growth.
Change of heart. Tides turning in the ocean.
Life after death.
Life after death. So Karnak reveals that her name is actually Penny Lamb. And
Pierce.
Yeah. Rock on, Penny. And she can portray, like, it's kind of ambiguous whether she returns to Earth with this like same persona or if she's has something different. And then it's really kind of, this part kind of gives me chills to think about. Like, the end, it ends with just sort of seeing...
like a compilation of memories.
Yeah, of Penny Lamb or, you know, Jane Doe living her life from childhood through old age.
Uh-huh.
We watch, like, family videos.
Sad. So then we see Virgil the Rat has finally torn through the rubber and kills himself and Karnak. Before Karnak can give his final piece of insight.
Right. So his final words are him absolutely glitching out. Your lucky number is 7. You will soar to great heights. Be sure to ride the cyclone.
And then the teens all sing, it's just a ride. And their spirits travel to the next stage of afterlife.
Da-da-da. It's so... I'm kind of awesome.
It is cool.
To me, it is awesome.
Super unique, super original, fun music. Crazy stories,
and it's so weird, and there's so much internet content about it.
It's
that's what's cool about,
I would love to see a production of this,
contemporary shows, is there's just so much content about them. And I think this one has really attracted a cult following, like we said earlier, like it's giving Heathers.
Yeah.
And I just feel like there's so much info about it online, and like the different casts and recordings of the different people singing different songs, and all the, there's a lot of, you know what there is? Lore. A lot of lore.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah. So, Ryan Murphy, if you want to do that joint production of Cats, Spelling Bee, Sideshow, and Ride the Cyclone, let's do it.
You know where to find us. And you've always known where to find us. And the show, I mean, like we said, it ran off Broadway for a bit of time. And it's had a life afterwards. I think a lot of regional theaters have done it. They did it at the Alliance. They've done it at the Chicago Shakespeare, obviously.
Arena Stage in D.C.
And I think it's been fairly well received. I just don't see it often.
Yeah.
But I feel like the...
It's a hard sell, I feel like.
The set
especially
is also...
for an older crowd.
But I guess we don't really see Sideshow that much either. Mm-hmm. And when we saw it, it was so good.
Yeah, I loved it.
But...
It just doesn't get done.
I've never seen it advertised or done literally anywhere
It's a hard
else.
Sell.
Yeah. But...
but fun, more people should do it.
Yeah.
And
hope
colleges
to see...
should do it too. Like, it's perfect age for college.
So
kids.
True. And good design, because there's a lot of different like set stuff, yeah. Costumes, different like crazy, I don't know, acting exercises.
So, Kate, what would you rate this?
I think I would give it honestly like a 9 out of 10. I've been loving every show that we've done this season.
Me
so
too.
Far. What would you give it?
I think I'd give it an 8 out of 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just think as far as it's exciting to me because it's an original concept. It's so weird and random. I'm not always a huge contemporary music. Sometimes in musicals, I'm sort of like, okay, that was fine. But I kind of feel like this music is really fun and different and interesting. Mm-hmm. And the story is so weird. I've just never really heard anything like it.
Same.
And I like that.
Me too. Props to originality.
Props to originality. Yeah, maybe I'm looking forward to whatever the third
installment in
the Uranium trilogy. Scream trilogy.
The first one is, we didn't talk about this, but it's a show called Legoland, which takes place of like these kids that are also from Uranium City. So it's just like in the same universe. But
yeah, and Penny Lamb, I think, is a character in that, which is why it's like crazy that she's Penny Lamb.
Right.
A lot of lore. These people, they're building a universe.
So I'm excited to see how the third one connects to the story.
Yeah.
Well, you know, also, which is a fun fact about this episode, is that we are reviewing this show based off of suggestions.
Yeah.
So if you have musicals that you specifically want us to talk about, let us know. Slide into our DMs at WTFBway. That is at WTFBWAY on Instagram.
And as always, you can listen to us on the Broadway Podcast Network or wherever you do your podcast listening.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Kate.
And this is
What's That From?
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.